Hey guys, just a quick note. I'm sorry that we didn't post last week. Everyone had a busy schedule and we just couldn't figure out a good time to sit down and record. So this is a mini podcast that I did by myself on the side about the Matrix. Yeah, I hope you guys enjoy it. Also, by the way, follow us on Instagram at stop_motion_podcast. And thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy. I'm Henry, your host, and today we're doing a little different. I'm going on my own, and I'm just going to talk about a movie that some of the guys at Stop Motion are very big fans of. I'm looking at you, Luca, and that movie is The Matrix. The Matrix is an amazing movie. Has its critical acclaim around the world. Has the likes of Keanu Reeves, Carrie Ann Moss, Lawrence Fishburne, just to name a few. It has, I wouldn't say it's transcended generations, but it has an 8.7 IMDb score, 88% on Rotten Tomatoes, and 73% on Metric. For a movie that is very out of left field, I wouldn't say cult classic, because it's pretty mainstream. But it's just an amazing, amazing movie. So, first let's get into some fun facts about the movie. First, the unnamed city that they're to the Matrix, like where they go in the Matrix, is actually Sydney, Australia. It was both the production was shot in Sydney for tax purposes, and lower film budget. It's meant to be Chicago, but it's Sydney, and it's Sydney. Also, martial arts choreographer Yuen Wu Ping created the film's elaborate stunts and wire work. Because in The Matrix, there's a lot of they talk a lot about breaking the boundaries of reality and like for and freeing your mind. So some of the stunts that are done are not normal. Like, Neo shoots an agent halfway down a building in midair, and he's like flying through midair. Like, gravity's no big deal. So it makes sense. Also, this is more of a what if than a fact, but both Will Smith and Nicolas Cage formally turned down the roles of Neo, the main character played by Keanu Reeves. And honestly, I could totally see Will Nicolas Cage doing it, but I don't think I could totally see him, like this is simulation Neo, and I couldn't see either him or Will Smith. I'm just like going through the shock that is so well displayed by an amazing younger Keanu Reeves. They say that there's a Matrix 4 coming out in 2022. I'm not 100% sure about that. Because the way it looks now, like Keanu Reeves, he's a bigger star, and because he of his work on John Wick and that trilogy. So I don't know how much John Wick will come into the new Matrix movie. It just feels like, it might just feel wrong. Also, Samuel L. Jackson could have been Morpheus, along with Sean Connery and Russell Crowe. That was a possibility. I definitely see Morpheus as a Samuel L. Jackson type. I wouldn't go as far as saying Morgan Freeman, because Morpheus is young. He has that like young vibe to him, but I could definitely see him being portrayed by a Samuel L. Jackson Because like Samuel L. Jackson is really great in a lot of movies, like as the director of S.H.I.E.L.D., just to name one. But I could totally see him doing that. Let me check my notes. The filmmakers color-coded the movie. See, I actually read about that. It's obvious from the start that there is a green tint when you're in the Matrix. And I read online, I'm doing some half-assed internet research, that the green tint is actually because the code for the computers that are running the Matrix are in green, and that's why you get that green tint. I actually think that's an amazing, amazing way of tying in, like answering some questions. Like they could have just had like the green tint and no one really understood why. They're like, what the fuck's this? Like, why is this way? And they're just like, oh yeah, it's just like it's up to the viewer, but to interpret it. But I actually like how they color coded it like that. The lead actor trained every day for 4 months in order to pull off the fight scenes. Yeah, that makes sense. There's a lot of fight scenes, and Morpheus and Neo have fight scenes together against each other. So it makes sense how they spent 4 months perfecting that, because this movie wouldn't be what it is if they just half-assed it all the way through. It would just not be what it is today. Keanu Reeves had cervical spine surgery prior to the training period that forced him to wear a neck brace throughout. See, the thing with The Matrix is that it's not my favorite movie of all time. I know some people that like are diehard Matrix fans. I honestly am not the biggest fan of it. It's a really good movie. It's an amazing movie, but I just feel that I preferred Inception. And part of that is because there's like goop. There's a lot of gore in it that just doesn't seem to be necessary. But the like it's interesting and it's different and it just plays differently than Inception would, because Inception just seems more clear cut and clean, whereas The Matrix it seems like a very jagged and stirred world. So it and so I could totally see an actor actually having a disability of some kind during the production of that movie, but I also feel that it would also aid to the just jagged and roughness of the movie that it just creates. Neo and Trinity's 3-minute lobby shootout took 10 days to shoot. That's an actually very interesting one, because the lobby shootout scene, I have to be very careful with how I say this, because it is a very, very good scene. It's just that from a plot perspective, and I'm all about plot, I'm all about storylines, I'm all about that. I'm starting to lose my found like willingness to enjoy fight scenes, because fight scenes don't drive anything forward. If a good fight scene can drive the plot forward, then that just means that it adds layers and it cuts down on the movie's unnecessary runtime. Because like the unnecessary runtime of like it adds like sometimes movies add stuff that are just unuseful and unhelpful to the audience, like too many fight scenes. There's like and with no story progression or character development, just makes the movie feel more rushed and tacked on. But I feel The Matrix does do a pretty good job of telling the story of a character not only through fight scenes but through parts of a movie where other directors and other filmmakers would have just made some unnecessary dialogue. The custom sunglasses for each of the sunglasses for each character were custom designed. Now that's a very interesting one, because I don't understand it at all. I don't understand why they wear sunglasses all the time. I feel like every single time the agent takes off his glasses. I feel like, oh my gosh, there's like there's he's not gonna have any eyes or some stuff or some shit like that. But it's just him wearing his glasses normally, and it just feels like, oh, like it's just a normal guy. It just seems like a normal guy under that, and maybe they're playing into that. But especially with Morpheus, because Morpheus has these glasses that you just like sit on your nose and stuff, and it's just really weird, to see like so many characters have sunglasses. So it's just I don't understand the sunglasses, but it makes sense that they were all custom designed because they play a pretty big role in the wardrobe of the movie. And finally, one of my last notes are the iconic bullet scene effects were conceived and created especially for The Matrix. The famous swirl shot of Neo's gravity-defying back bend was made using a rig contracted of 120 individual digital cameras and two film cameras. These images were carefully stitched together to create the shot frame by frame. The first test shot of the bullet time effect had a nearly 360-degree view of an exploding trash can. Now, I have to say, the bullet time effects that happen not throughout, but then like the last 40 minutes of the movie, they're great. They just seem like it's an example of a movie's where a movie's too good, because like it's iconic with Neo just going back and dodging bullets as like his bending his back and stuff like that. It's iconic. It's iconic. I will not lie to you. It's awesome, but it feels like the movie has made an enemy of itself, because like before I saw The Matrix, I always saw like these like like bullet time effects, and it just makes me feel that it just seems cliche when they were the first ones to do it. So it's technically not cliche, but the movie traps itself in this sort of paradox where they created the cliche, but it just but the cliche is like but the awesomeness of the cliche for the first time is lost in itself. I think I've been saying cliche too much. But now let's go to the scene by scene breakdown. So The Matrix, the opening scene. I have to say, the cops in this movie, and for that matter the SWAT team, and pretty much the agents as well up until like the last 20 minutes, they all have stormtrooper aim. That's a chronic case. Also, I have to point this out now and just forever point this out again. The movie makes real life seem less and tries and makes the world that we live in now, which is apparently to them the Matrix, it makes them seem more dull. It makes the world seem like it's less important and less meaningful, and you're really living in the simulation. And like when you're sitting in the movie theater, you kind of sit there and like, yeah, this movie's like really showing us how dull our lives are. Like, why aren't we waking up and going and living on a spaceship in 2196, 98 or whatever? But then you go out in life and you realize that it's not that dull. There's people's lives there, and it's cool, and I understand it. It just seems like it's more dull than it has to be. Like you could just show regular day life, and it would still not be as cool as The Matrix and the way people were living. But you didn't have to make it seem so dull. I don't know if some people might have catched that in the movie, but it just seemed to me that the people that were living in the Matrix in real time just seemed to be living a much duller life than Neo and Morpheus were, and there was a sort of hierarchy to that. Also, another thing about the green hue, I know it has this deeper meaning to it, but I feel like it could have gone without it, and it still wouldn't have taken away from the greatness of this movie. And I think that's pretty much every single complaint I have for every single movie I ever do, that if they do something, you could have done it without it and still had a great movie and not have given me like eye problems. And now the scene with the phone in the office. Great scene. I also usually hate action sequences like that, But I have to say that just builds in a level of suspense and intensity that I don't usually see in action sequences. So it's very awesome to see the action sequences go just so like intensely and have so much in stake when you hardly know Neo. Like you just know this guy as a hacker that woke up late for work and stuff. And it just seems like they did a really good job of making you care about him for like 5 minutes until he goes out on the ledge and then he's like, you know what, this is stupid, and he just goes and gets himself caught, which is also another great plot twist in the early minutes of the movie, because people would be asking themselves, oh yeah, like what he Neo's done nothing. Neo's done nothing. What possibly could they do to him? Like how could it be that bad? And Neo and the director did something interesting and made him get caught to say, hey, these guys mean business, like right off the bat. They show the audience what the agents are capable of. And it freaks everyone. It freaked me out. But interrogation scene. It does really. Also, I understand that Neo is trying to live in a regular reality, and this happens a lot in movies where the main character is told something that changes their life, like oh, time travel is real and stuff like that. I feel like I personally would have done a better job in just being like, all right, time travel is real. All right, where are we going? Or we're not living a real life. Okay, so let me figure out how I can do this and that. But when Neo asks, he's like, "I know my rights." He knows that he's done nothing wrong, and he knows that there are people out there to help him, and he knows that these guys mean business. Like he knows these guys mean business. I would honestly not say that, like talk about like knowing my rights, because I feel like those guys do not respect my rights. Like they all look the same, and there's obviously something fishy going on. So I would definitely not believe that they would respect my rights. And then the scene after he wakes up, and he gets in the car, and he gets in the car with the whole crew, with the Morpheus's crew. I have to say it's very funny how the agents planted a bug in Neo, and so like the Matrix is a simulation, so it's a literal bug. I think it's funny, and the irony is lost in itself because it just like there's no real time for laughing at that point in the first like 20 minutes of the movie. It's all like there is no time. You have no time to explain. And this is launching into my attack against Morpheus. I'm really not a fan of Morpheus for a few reasons. One of the reasons being is because Morpheus is like every single time before he reaches the ship, or before he joins like the reality that is like the real life in 2198. Like Morpheus is always like, "There's no time, Neo. You gotta like." And we're like, yeah, like I get it, you're on a strained schedule, but like and there's guys and the agents are coming after you, but you could just like stop for a second and be like, you're living in a simulation, this is not the real world, come with me and I'll tell you more later. Because like every single time Neo asks something and Morpheus is like, there's no time, Neo just stands there for like 5 seconds. He's like, oh, what is going on? And Morpheus could have used that time to explain some more things instead of dragging him along the entire time. The Matrix loading simulation. Morpheus is still trying to give as much vagueness as possible, especially like in the line where Neo asks, is this real? And then he's like, what do you define as real? Like, come on. I'm sure Morpheus has met many people that live in the simulation, that live in the Matrix, And that's what they define as real. They define feeling and living as real. And so you getting down into the getting down into the nitty-gritty scientific stuff of it doesn't help anyone. It just makes people more confused and more vague as to what's going on. Also, Keanu Reeves is amazing in this movie. I could honestly not see Will Smith or Nicolas Cage doing as good a job as Keanu Reeves did. I could not see Nicolas Cage going into this because I feel like he had too many past movies beforehand. So you wouldn't see Nicolas Cage. You'd have seen the guy from National Treasure or the guy from Gone in 60 Seconds. I'm not 100% sure if these were if those movies came before or after. I'm assuming they came after, but still, I don't think that I think they needed some obscurity in that role to make to like really mold the Neo character as a real person and not as an actor, and that's a problem that happens all the time. And talking to Neo scene, that precedes it, where Tank goes and gives Neo, goes into Neo's living quarters and talks to him. Tank, I have to say, is one of my favorite characters in the entire movie. He goes through a lot of pain. He goes through a lot of trauma throughout the movie. Spoilers, by the way. But I have to say, he does seem like the kind of character where you're supposed to like, oh my gosh, I love Tank, and like you like love him for 5 minutes, and then he either betrays you or he dies. He did neither, but it seemed like he died for a while there, and that's very important to and that's very important to his character and his character development. Neo, and then the next scene is Neo sparring with Morpheus. This is a scene that I'm sure took forever for not only Keanu Reeves to prepare for, but the actor playing Morpheus, whose name escapes me at the moment. His name is Lawrence Fishburne. It's a scene that takes a lot of time. It's a scene that takes up a lot of time, but it's a fight scene. But it also displays what the Matrix is and how and the parameters of the Matrix. Like when Morpheus says that some of the rules can be bent and some of the rules can be broken, that's like, okay, so now I know that I don't have to go back into the Matrix, assuming to live in a normal Earth. I can bend it and I can mush it to my ability. It's a great fight scene. It's not a very linear fight scene, where like it's not a fight scene where it's like, oh, he gets hit 3 times and he dies and stuff like that. It's very, I wouldn't say sporadic, but it's just different. It's not a fight scene that you could describe as you could describe in words. You'd have to just show it to him. But it's also not like very out of the blue where things just happen without cause and stuff. So it makes sense, but it's also not normal. It's hard for me to describe. I really love the scene, and it's hard for me to pinpoint what I love about it, but also what I how I feel about it. The next scene is Neo and Cypher. I hate Cypher. I hated him from the minute I met him. I also hated him from like before. I hated him before he turned. But it does raise a very interesting talking point as how Morpheus could also be perceived as the bad guy. If you look at it from a different angle, you could think of it as Morpheus. Think of Morpheus as a terrible, terrible guy, because he awakens people. People are living in this what they think is reality when it's really just the Matrix and stuff. And it just seems like it's not fair for someone to not like he can't tell like he should be able to tell someone enough about the Matrix for them to be like, oh, I do not want to know that. And so they can take the other pill. I forget which pill it was. The pill that makes them forget and wake up in the morning and go back to real life. Because I feel like most people would take the blue pill, I believe it is, and learn more because they're curious. But once they find out the real dark and deep and sickening truth, they really just like feel like, wow, this is life. This kind of sucks. And I feel, and it paints a darker picture of how Morpheus has taken these people and basically sentenced them to a life of living or of walking among people that think that their life is real when they're really just living a lie. Also, I do like Cypher for the fact that he explains more things quick. He explains things better and quicker than Morpheus does. Like he explains like what the cascading numbers and letters on the screen mean, and he does a better job of explaining it to Neo, whereas Morpheus would just be like, I don't know, what do you see, Neo? And he just sees numbers and letters. And so I like that. And so Cypher and the agent, this is there usually in movies, there would be some sort of dialogue to indicate, like maybe Cypher makes a call to an agent, or Cypher does something, he does something weird, and that makes you suspect. But in this movie, no, it is just gonna full out and tell you that Cypher's working with the bad guys, and I bet that every single person in that theater was like, "Whoa, okay, so we hate Cypher now." Like, geez, that is, wow, that was fast. And like I don't think the movie gave Cypher enough time for audiences to enjoy, like for the audience to enjoy him. Like, oh, this is Cypher, yeah, he's a pretty cool guy. Like they gave him one pretty good scene with Neo and with him talking to Neo, but I still feel that like they could have done more to show him as a normal character and not a traitor. So then, like when it happens, there's more shock and awe. There's more shock and awe with him being a traitor. Like, oh my God, he's a traitor. And so, yeah, it just seems like it's pretty out of the blue. I enjoy it. I like the plot twist in a sense, but it's not like you don't know the character well enough for it to be a huge plot twist. Also, I under and so again, Cypher does paint a picture of the downsides to learning about the Matrix, and I think that was very necessary in the making of this movie, so that people not only see you like how amazing it is that they're living a lie, but how bad it is to find out that they actually are. And then the next scene is the breakfast with the crew scene. I have to say that I have to come out and say this now. Mouse was always weird. From the first time I saw The Matrix to the time I just saw it, last time I saw it, Mouse has been like the weirdest guy that I have ever seen. Like Morpheus definitely could have picked up, like he could have picked up and chosen someone else that's not as I don't know, I wouldn't like creepy as Mouse is, because Mouse, he's just weird, and I'm pretty sure no one really likes Mouse on the crew and stuff, and it just seems that it's very he's just there to fill in space. He's just a character. He's a colorful character to fill in space and for him to from his death to be mourned more. And then the next scene after that is the Oracle scene. Well, and I have to say, what really breaks my noodle, if you've watched the movie, you get that reference, is that the Oracle, apparently the most powerful person in the Matrix, who knows, she knows everything, is apparently she lives in a housing, like a housing project, and I don't understand that. Like I understand how like people that like in some movies, people that have great spiritual, I would say, ability are very they're very they don't have as many they don't have as many worldly possessions, and that's just them. It's like more is like less is more and stuff is that like that. And it's great. It's a great and interesting way of spinning the most powerful person in the world. But I just feel like the Oracle would have gone for something a little more, I wouldn't say lavish, but more practical. Like she's really living in a, I'm imagining like a 500 square foot apartment with like 16 kids. It just doesn't make sense to me. And that's just, and it's a great scene. Like I love the Oracle and the idea of her and the acting, but it just doesn't really make sense to me because I would probably choose something else. Also, I don't really understand the meaning of the Oracle because, like, I understand it's important to Neo living, but they could have done, like, the Matrix does a good job of leaving, like, just doing, like, it does a good job explaining stuff throughout the movie, which is vital because the Matrix is a very complicated world, one of the more complicated worlds for movies. In the cinematic industry, but I feel like it could have done without the Oracle and still have like, oh, Neo comes back, and they could have explained that in the next movie in Matrix Reloaded and stuff like that. And it just seems like it's tacking onto the runtime because all she does is she just confirms what Neo thinks and tells the audience that Neo doesn't think that he's the one. And it's that simple. And it is true that Trinity talks about the Oracle later, but it just seems that it's unnecessary to the plot at that moment. Hotel and deja vu scene. Deja vu, I don't understand deja vu like from a medical perspective in this reality, but it's really interesting to see movies like that, like movies like Inception, where they take real world mysteries and they spin and they like, all right, this is deja vu. This is what is actually happening. It's a glitch in the matrix. It's something where they change something. It's where they change something. But I also feel in that time where Morpheus was talking to Neo as vaguely as possible, he could have been like, blah blah blah, blah blah blah. Oh yeah, by the way, deja vu means there's a glitch in the matrix. Blah 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 blah. Because that would have been very important for Neo to know, and because like he could have seen deja vu 10 times and not said anything about it. And that would have been fine, but like if he didn't say deja vu when he saw that black cat, there's your problem because like then they're all done because they wouldn't know that there's agents coming. Like there's agents coming. Tank probably would have spotted them, but it still seems like they could have done without it. They could have like told him earlier. But it is, I'll say it again, it does explain things. Like I love when movies explain stuff that science doesn't really have an explanation for. And it's like, yeah, I can believe that. I back that up. And in like a joking way, you could be like deja vu. Like the next time your friend has deja says like, oh, deja vu, you can like get really scared and be like, there's a glitch in the matrix. We're compromised. And like start running around. They're in the and so the next scene that I have something to say is there is the there in the wall scene. When Morpheus says, get Neo out, he's the only one that matters. He is sorely mistaken about that. At that exact moment, Neo matters pretty much the least. He brings to the crew what a fifth grader brings to what a fifth grader would bring to the crew, because he doesn't really understand what's going on. Because Morpheus has been dragging him through the mud, he needs someone to teach him and for someone to learn. So if Morpheus is the last is if Neo's the last one alive, he can't do as much because he would have to rely on Tank to help him out, and Tank, who's never been in the Matrix, wouldn't understand what's happening. So it just seems like if he could have gotten his priorities straight there. Cypher calling Trinity. Cypher again is really weird, and I was really sad to see Tank die. Tank and I saw to see Tank and Dozer die. Tank died, air quotations there. But it proves my point that the only real reason that Tank was there was to be liked for 10 minutes and then like die. Because then it shows more tragedy in the movie, and I feel like that's why they make such a make a likable character in the movies. In movies is because like, oh, he's like really well liked. Yeah, and now I'm gonna kill him off to show tragedy in this movie and show how the and show some very, I wouldn't say simplistic, but ha very linear character development, because I feel like grieving brings out a lot of emotion in people, and so it's a very easy device for writers to use to get more story out of characters. Also, Cypher, that just like Cypher was okay, yeah, Cypher was a traitor and he wanted to live a real life again, but I feel like they just like they just the writers just got on the Cypher hate train and just rolled with it, because they're like, yeah, Cypher's weird, Cypher doesn't Cypher's weird and he's creepy towards Trinity and stuff like that, and he's like pulling the plug of some of these guys. The Morpheus pulling, and then after that, when Tank kills Cypher, and they come out of the Matrix, and the Morpheus pulling of the plug. The Oracle told Neo that you had to make a choice. You had to make a choice. Okay, like this happens all the times in prophecies in the movie. Like this happens all the times where they talk about prophecies in the movie, where oh, he had to make a choice. He had to make this choice. He had to make like you have to make a choice coming up. And you're like, yeah, that could mean anything. That could mean whether you want a cheeseburger or a hamburger or whatever. It does not mean that you have to choose whether to pull the plug on Morpheus or to let him, and let him die and let him give away the code to Zion. It just seems like she could have been more upfront and more clear and prevented the inevitable, well, apparently the inevitable capture and interrogation of Morpheus. And then the lobby fight scene, as we said it again, it took 10 days. 10 days for Trinity and Neo to get that done, to get like for them to get that filming in, and that makes sense to me. Like last week when we talked about Saving Private Ryan, that first beach scene took forever for them to shoot because it's a huge scene that requires a lot of thinking and coordination. That's like just recording it is easy. It's easy enough, but for them to piece it together in a way that makes sense and have like the environment around it disrupted with continuity makes it even more hard for the editing team to do that. So props to the editing team because they did a very good job of making this movie very like lifelike and continuity free, I guess. Oh, now we come to the rooftop scene. The last okay, I do have something about the last 40 minutes of this movie. The last 40 minutes of this movie do seem a little rushed, and you can fight me on that, but it just feels like in the first half, in the first like I don't know, like an hour and 20 minutes of the movie or whatever, seems like you learn so much, and they bring nuances to the world that you live in, and they change it, and they manipulate it to what they to what they want to show. But in the last 20 minutes, they don't really teach you anything new. They just roll with what they have. They're like, okay, that's enough. You've stopped learning, and now you're going to go about and do it. And it also is the debuting of the slow-mo bullet dodge, bullet time. And I think, yeah, it's been ripped off a couple times, and I saw the bullet dodge being ripped off multiple times, so it feels like it just doesn't seem as fresh and as innovative as it should feel to me, and I feel like I've been numbed by I feel like I've been numbed by spin-offs and changes and changing, and yeah, and that makes it the movie an enemy of itself because it's so iconic. Like that scene is so iconic that it's been ripped off, and I've seen it a bunch of times. So the nuance to it is lost in me, and I've said that before, and I'm going to say it again because I feel like it's very important for movies to dance the line where people don't rip it off, but it's still amazing, and that's hard, and I don't think anyone's ever done a good job of it. Yeah, and so now we're on the last couple scenes. The subway station telephone. I have to say, all right, here's another problem I have, grievance I have with this movie. Every single time they go up to a telephone, they're like, Neo, you go first, or Morpheus, you go first, or something like that. And it just seems to me that it's like very, it seems like they're waiting for stuff, for part of my French here, but shit to go south. And they're waiting for someone to like come from the depths and kill them, or try and kill them, or ambush them. And it seems, and it's not sloppy, it's just, it puts everyone on the edge of their seat, like just take the phone and go and stuff. And yeah, it just seems that they could have just like, okay, here, go, and then have the ambush, rather than just drag it out and make everyone in the audience more anxious. But maybe that was, but now that I'm thinking about it, maybe that means that was the filmmaker's intent to make everyone as anxious as possible. Because like I know for the first time I saw it, it's just pick up the phone, just pick it up. Yeah. And now we come to the chase scene through the market and the building. That was a great scene. Great scene. Chase scenes, I love chase scenes. They're awesome. Especially the one at the start of the movie. If it had any indication as to how the movie was gonna go. It just like they did a great job in this movie on doing the chase scenes, because chase scenes don't, they're like action scenes. But I don't know, it's harder for them to have progress and to have like progression, to like to have character progression, but because there's not as much dialogue, so like they have to be really good, or otherwise people just be like, this is stupid, this takes forever, why am I sitting here watching this? I could be like doing other things, I could be writing down some stuff or whatever. But they did a good job in this because they showed a lot of like the shaking camera and stuff really showed the hecticness them and how Neo was like running around frantically. So I think they did a really good job on this scene, and it keeps the viewer very intrigued and wanting more. All right, thank you for listening. Next week we will be back with Knives Out, and from all of us here at Stop Motion, we will see you next week.